is episode 384 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and/or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of September 28th through October 4th, 2024. What's new this week? We will drive the bailiffs away. We will defend Rosebrot together! From rosebrot.org, a site in Polish with occasional articles in English. Rosebrot is, quote, the oldest living occupied social center in Eastern Europe, one of the oldest squats on the continent, unquote. And of course that means that the legal troubles have been ongoing. This is an article about the latest resistance to Rosebrot being evicted through state and developer shenanigans.
Anti-repression talks, number one, preparing for physical surveillance. From the No Trace Project at notrace.how. This introduces a series of talks on surveillance and security internationally for anarchist networks. It will include sessions in person and online, and findings will be published. This seems like a cool mix of tech and anarchy, and is very organized, at least on paper, with planned integration of study groups and preparatory readings and stuff. Maybe some attendees will do report backs. That was Anti-Repression Talks, Preparing for Physical Surveillance.
San Antonio Sliding Scale Anarchist Book Fair from Anon. Very brief announcement that does explain that the sliding scale part refers to prices for publications, not for entry. There is an email address for more info. It's happening in early December, so there's time to find out more.
Ephronatum, Volume 4, plus editorial. From ephronatum.noblogs.org. PDF publication info and the editorial for this edition of Ephronatum. The editorial is on what is unruly. There's a bit of confusion. The positing of an independent nation state was the goal of whom, exactly? But mostly, it's a pretty clear pro-uncontrollable, pro-barbarian commentary. Quote, we are not unruly, only up to a point. Our unruliness has nothing to do with progress. We are not humble participants in any history written by the chroniclers of the ruling order. We do not seek to be the bad guys in the annals of bad people, but we know there is little choice. We know we are so very much more. We are agents of selfish desire transmuted into loving fruits. We are innovators of solutions. We are wild organisms demonstrating the cultivation of freedom, of a desirable existence beyond merely existing in the society so many are resigned to. Our wisdom is expressed by anarchist scientists, anarchist poets, anarchist shamans, anarchist healers, anarchist warriors, unquote. There are some simplistic assessments along the lines of those dumb sheeple who don't want to rebel, but we've all had those days.
Blackbird, a howl of protest from Hong Kong anarchists, from Freedom News UK by Levon Kwok. A retrospective of a Hong Kong indie anarchist band from the 80s and 90s called Blackbird. Quote, seeing their music as an atavistic practice, Blackbird's members spent much time working not on the improvement of their playing skills, but on the interpretation of what they desire to communicate, anarchist politics. Because of this, Blackbird's music is, despite being raw in a technical sense, powerful and influential in inspiring people. All in all, Blackbird, as Maximum Rock and Roll reported, is the only politically radical band in Hong Kong, differentiating itself from other rock bands in Greater China during its heyday. Unquote.
Running Down the Walls, 2024 Recap, from Anarchist Black Cross Federation. This was the 25th year of this fundraiser for prisoners. Recaps from Chicago, Eugene, Oregon, Hamilton, Ontario, Los Angeles, California, Mexico City, New York, and Philadelphia. Come for the uplifting news about prisoner support, stay for the pics of dogs and a black squirrel.
It's funny a list like that, because I definitely am like, do I need to put the state? I should put the state. Don't make assumptions. And then Mexico City and New York, I'm like, no, I'm not putting whatever.
Is there more than one Los Angeles?
Probably not. But I'm just, it's me, it's a very subtle diss. It's an extremely subtle diss.
Got it.
Nobody would get the diss but me. Otto Gross, Psychoanalytic Anarchy, Erased Genius, from Distinctively Dionysian.noblogs.org by Fiona. Yay! Distinctively Dionysian and Fiona are back. Delighted to hear that this project is at least semi-active again. This particular short piece reintroduces some of us to Otto Gross in a companion pamphlet with persona non grata and resurrecting legacy, also from distinctively Dionysus. Quote, "The deliberate forgetting of Otto Gross is an intellectual injustice that demands rectification. Like Stirner, Gross's radical ideas were buried by the powers that be, deemed too dangerous or too truthful. Pathologized and labeled mentally unstable, Otto Gross was very purposely cast aside, his contributions to psychoanalysis and anarchism erased and largely forgotten." Unquote.
Monica Caballero's words 26 years after the murder of Claudia Lopez, from Abolition Media. A brief and not particularly memorable acknowledgement of Claudia, who was killed by police in Chile. Remembering people is good, which is basically what Monica says here too.
Anarchism's Least Wanted, Organizing in Conservative Regions, from organizemagazine.org.uk. That's organized with an S, thank you very much. This is someone writing from Texas who apparently has some asshole friends. The author here notes that after one disaster struck, during which people came together to help each other, and they lament that they did not do more to cement patterns and behaviors, so that those connections didn't last longer post-disaster. This article also rejects the idea that people should just leave states with particularly murderous political tendencies, and promotes formal organization as a way to maintain structures and relationships from one crisis to the next, since that's been their experience. This is not a sophisticated comparison of informal versus formal, or organization versus affinity, or any of the other directions that anarchists have argued this point. Rather, this is someone who is anticipating needing help soon, and wanting there to be something to rely on, and arguing that one form will work better than others. Which, sometimes, it does, for some things, for a while. There is some thinking here that I would call delusional, like that, quote, "we are successfully making slow incremental growth and change," unquote. But hey, delusion can be an important coping tactic.
Disaster Compassion is Real in North Carolina, from Birds Before the Storm by Margaret Kiljoy. Margaret talks about her direct experience on the ground in North Carolina, post Helena. She is not suggesting that other people go there, and promises more in an upcoming article or podcast or both. Quote, "Outside Firestorm, the anarchist bookstore, someone wrote up a bilingual instructions for making and using dry toilets using 5-gallon buckets, sawdust, and pipe insulation for a seat. She expected to give away a couple. Within 2 hours, she'd given away more dry toilets than she'd brought, because people saw what she was doing and went and got her buckets and pipe insulation. And meanwhile, a man who owns a sawmill was driving around looking for people who were going to need sawdust for dry toilets," unquote. A better place to put our energy than hoarding toilet paper, though I guess they're not mutually exclusive. That was Disaster Compassion is Real.
Yeah, Gaza Habibti, Gaza My Love, from Crime Think. This is a history lesson on the recent political history of Palestine and Gaza specifically, and by recent I mean it goes back to 1943. This article lives up to the Crime Think moniker of the anarchist New York Times, by which I mean that it is extensive, informed, and grounded as far as it goes, and that it doesn't challenge some parameters that ideally anarchists would be poking at. There is a lot of information here about Hamas, about the PLO, about what's happened since October 7th, 2023. Quote, "In view of this, I want to propose one way to see October 7th. No one outside Hamas knows exactly what led them to decide to initiate such an attack. There are many theories, and I'll add my own. Hamas might have reached the conclusion that the resistance government was no longer working, that it was in fact actually an obstacle, and decided to return to its origins as a guerrilla formation and social movement. They might have tried to do this many times before, as we can see from the many reconciliation attempts with Fatah. They showed a willingness to relinquish control over Gaza and work toward elections time and time again. Bocconi's Hamas Contained details many such attempts and how they were derailed by Israel and the US. Perhaps they thought it was time for something extreme to force them back to the path of resistance, a kind of a government suicide. They have made it clear since October that they are willing to give up governing Gaza, but won't disarm. Another indication that they are attempting to return to their origins." Unquote. This article will be very satisfying to some readers.
A response to you, Gaza Habibti, Gaza My Love, from cyberdandy.org. This response to the CrimeThink article provides some of the depth and provocation missing from the CrimeThink piece, especially given that the author is in the comments, clarifying points and engaging in good faith disagreements. Quote, "Finally, to emphasize my point again, the problem is that nationalism and its logic leads to conclusions like Palestine should be a majority Arab land. Obviously, it also leads to Zionist conclusions about Jewish statehood as well. The pursuit of a national politics, and especially ones that seek a nation state, whether Zionist or Palestinian, ties movements to the broader power dynamics of global capitalism and imperialism. This is a problem that an anti-colonial emphasis underplays by recognizing some forms of national sovereignty as more legitimate than others, so long as it is not colonial. From an anarchist perspective, national sovereignty itself is illegitimate. No one should be born to rule, nor born to serve." Unquote. A full thumbs up for a response to Yegaza Habibti by Cyber Dandy.
Hostages of the Gun on Militancy and Militarism from north-shore.info. The second of two really good, thoughtful, insightful, and informative articles this week, this piece by Anon talks about violence with plenty of references to various movements and a challenge for anarchists to better our capacity for and relationship to violence. It starts out with a bump as the author requests that anarchists stop joking about violence. Quote, "When we treat political violence as a joke, we are saying it is unrealistic or impossible or ridiculous, which is the opposite of true. Every instance of revolutionary social change involves, in one way or another, overcoming the existing power system, and this always involves some level of violence. There aren't a ton of examples of successful recent revolutions, but if we look at the Arab Spring revolutions of the early 2010s, we can get a sense of the different degrees of violence revolution can entail." Unquote. This gets at the role of humor and various kinds of humor, which is obviously beyond the scope of this article, but I'll just note that people make jokes for a lot of reasons, sometimes they're contradictory, and leave it at that. The point made by the article that joking can also trivialize is certainly valid. Anyway, this is an article worth reading. Quote, "In their amazing book about the Syrian Revolution and Civil War, Burning Country, Leila Alshami and Robin Yassin Kassab describe militarization as struggle becoming about the scramble for weapons and money that transformed the revolution from a leaderless movement into a cacophony of 1,000 competing leaders, from horizontalism to a jostle of hierarchies." Unquote. That was Hostages of the Gun.
A Philosophy for Anarchism from Federation of Anarchism Era by Aryanam. A pretty short treatise on the meaning of philosophies, the importance of sociability and of honesty. Quote, "Then, in the absence of societal power, the absence of rulers and ruled, the absence of domination and exploitation, the absence of social hierarchies, the absence of obedience, we would have the sole reference independent compass not centering anything in existence. No humans, no animals, no nature, no ancestors, no gods, and not our current interpretations of reality. Anarchism. We need not put trust in the compass, ceaselessly evaluating and verifying its capability and efficacy, destroying the old and building anew to make a difference, to be different, to each according to their needs, and from each according to their abilities." Unquote. Mostly pretty cool, though the part about honesty is simplistic, I think. How we present to other people and ourselves can be a lot more complicated than repped by a truth-lie binary. Not to even mention that lying to the cops is a favorite indoor sport. Just saying. Let's each of us write up our personal philosophy for anarchism. There's some homework.
Destabilization of Russia as a Way to Freedom in Belarus from Praman. This article makes the argument that Belarusian anarchists and anarchists in the Russian diaspora need a strong internationalist anti-imperialist movement. Quote, "We need to strengthen support for BOK and other revolutionary organizations outside Russia, financially and organizationally. We need to develop and increase interaction and informational and joint structures for political growth in exile in all regions where diasporas from various countries are located, from Georgia to Poland, Germany, France, and Lithuania. Today, cooperation with progressive Russian activists is critical to our own existence. Yes, it can be extremely difficult for many Belarusian activists, given some of the peculiarities of many activists from Russia related to their socialization, but we should put our emotions aside and help our comrades to reflect on their origins. This is how we can find the path to liberation." Unquote. What can I say? The article makes it sound so straightforward.
Obituaries. Valencian anarchist Yippie, founder of legendary Scaparapid, dies from elpuntavui.cat, which calls itself an independent journal of Catalan democracy, maybe, if I'm getting the tagline right. Anyway, quote, the well-known activist and charismatic musician Jesus Arteaga died on Friday, as confirmed by one of the organizations in which he collaborated, the CGT Union in Valencia. He also published the book Jóvenes y Menores on La Diana, where he analyzed the control of young people through television. A declared anarchist, he was one of the founders of one of the most influential groups of the alternative movement in Valencia, the Scaparapid, unquote.
Audio and video. Anarchist educator Jordan on alternative schooling from The Child and Its Enemies, 37 minutes. Host M.K. Zariel speaks to anarchist, abolitionist, feminist, father, and educator Jordan about compulsory education and truancy, organizing in high school, myths around schooling, etc. I wasn't bothered by anything here as I listened, and I continued to be impressed by the host for what that's worth, but I'm so far from the audience that it seems stupid for me to even have an opinion. Any teens, preteens, or recently post-teens want to weigh in on this podcast? I have some curiouses.
This is America, number 201 from It's Going Down, an hour and 43 minutes. The host talks first to someone who explains the logistics and challenges of relief efforts in North Carolina and the spread of the Helena mess, which is both interesting on the face of it and a lesson on what is to come for at least most of us. No phone service, no electricity, no water, no gas, and or all of the above. Situational awareness and self-sufficiency for those who are helping, etc. At about 28 minutes in, Scott Campbell, Enemy of the People, TM, starts talking about Israel and Lebanon. That topic is probably the rest of the episode, but I stopped listening.
We're doing this for the anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Y'all know that already.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, I am Vic.
I'm Madison.
I'm Smoke.
And we're doing the topic of the week, this week, about animism.
It's unsurprising that the pioneers of society opted for a worldview which justified their every act of brutality upon the earth. These soothsayers of progress and enlightenment favored a static world where their futures were calculable in advance. Chance, disruption, and the chaotic unknown were seen as rather costly in the measurable universe of dollars and cents, civilized and savage, human and nature. It's to this formula we largely owe our current denuded world. The math checks out, just look around for proof of its palpably absent spirit. The many perspectives of animism offer a dramatically different and enticing relationship of matter and spirit. As it most directly relates to anarchists, this perspective might be seen as an experiential relation where life is not separate from or justified above others. Instead, it acknowledges a dynamic world where various living beings shift with the tides, moods, and whims of fancy, fate, and folly. In the hands of an anarchist, this is more a formula of the chaotic unknown, i.e. anarchy, than the one that got us here. A pursuit toward animism challenges domineering materialism and tears down popular goalposts that previously evaluated success and failure. In this way, animism might feel more like learning how to hear the silence you've long grown deaf into. But a desperate desire to see the world anew isn't enough to heal ourselves, otherwise we'd have done it already. The worst and best part of this challenge is that it's non-instructive and without end. As a result, the perspective assumes unimaginable patience. This presents a curious paradox for anarchists sworn to defer action no longer and to realize themselves where they stand currently in the here and now. Animism complicates the simplicity of labels and reveals the inherent crisis of claiming versus being. I suspect some anarchists see the appeal of animism as a tool through which to combat the alienation bred from a life ruled by institutions. Others admit being too broken to even imagine a different world. Anarchists aren't alone in this will to see the world alive. In fact, we uncomfortably share this desire with some of our declared enemies. In an embarrassing Venn diagram, anarchists sit alongside popular academics trying to legitimize what they formally disavowed. Tenure track PhDs now lecture about the non-human term with verbose theories of vibrant matter, just as formerly secular anarchists donning no gods, no masters tattoos now wonder if smooth river rocks breathe and dream. You could argue pedagogues are paid for their inquiry while anarchists remain foolish amateurs, but the similar push to, quote, decenter the human feels like a humble mea culpa, whether published for university bookstores or unstapled zines. If the secret is to really begin, where do we start? What are examples of anarchists incorporating an animist perspective in their projects? Do you find the topic inspiring, or does it dredge up an unrelenting pessimism? How do we distinguish ourselves from the professional class that now look favorably on animism? However obvious, what are the biggest hurdles in formulating an anarchist perspective influenced by these lines of thought? If other worlds await, do we even have the patience to reach them?
Am I starting? Is that what that means? The thing that stood out to me right away is like the question about engaging with academics that want to talk about this, and I don't know why I would do that. Like, why does that matter to me at all? Like, it seems obvious, or I just feel used to people trying to make money off ideas, some of which I like, and usually I don't really care what they have to say about it. It's not very relevant. Maybe once in a while some of it like trickles down to me through an unstapled zine or something. But like, overall I'm not, it just feels like a distraction, especially with this topic, like trying to relate to the living world, especially non-human world, is a thing of, it's about doing and less so about like reading about doing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like for me it is trying to just spend time in the woods or whatever, meaningfully spend time with other people in a living environment or something, rather than like reading what academics have to say about that. That's just a total distraction.
I read it differently, or what I understood in that is that they're saying that the other people who are talking about this are, it's like we share a space with them.
Do
like
we?
In both talking.
What space do we share with them?
The thinking about animism space.
Is that actually sharing a space, or are they just thinking about a similar thing?
Right.
Sure, they're in conversation with the same set of ideas and probably the same set of, like, you know, uncomfortable anthropological writings. Academics, New Age people,
mm-hmm.
hippies, and spiritually motivated anarchy people.
Right, but I guess...
You're like, are they actually meeting up in a room together?
Yeah.
No, probably not.
Or like, what? No, no, that's not even my question. My question is, why would I meet up in a room with those people?
Mm.
Like, we actually are in different physical spaces, and I'm not on the internet enough, nor do I want to be on the internet enough to be, like, in conversation with them on there either. And so if I'm not going to do either of those things, then why do I need to think about what they're doing? Just let them do their own thing.
Yeah, you're in conversation with trees, rocks.
Sure.
The spring.
I would like to be more, yeah, like, I feel like if I'm going to be dedicating a part of my time to this animist thing, like thinking about animism, then the way I would like to be doing it is to be, yeah, in conversation with the spring, or, you know, walking on smooth rocks, etc., whatever the funny thing it was saying. Like, I'd way rather be doing that than going to a lecture about it in a college or reading an academic paper, you know? That just seems like a waste of time or something, maybe, for me personally. But, I mean, I care about what some people have to say about it. But usually they're not academics. Generally speaking, it's because I think they've led interesting lives.
Why do you think there's been a shift for people talking about animism recently? Because I remember maybe in 2005 or 6 or something, there was a big move toward this, and then there was a big shift away from it.
Mm.
And now it feels like it's back around. And the reasons why people shifted away, because there was like a lot of talk and criticism in the sort of like anarchist zeitgeist about cultural appropriation and things like that. And I noticed in the comments too that there was a lot of commentary about animism being like an anthropological term as opposed to a relationship, which I thought was a good point. But regardless of what it is, I think people engaging spiritually or more with the world like around them seems to be on the, you know, it seems to be happening more. So I'm wondering why do you think that is?
I could probably answer it for myself and like some conversations I've had with people, but I don't know, generally speaking, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure that it's happening, or if it's just because I'm interested in it. I'm gravitating towards people that are also interested in it.
Yeah, like the synchronicity or something.
Yeah, so it, like, to me seems like it's more present, but actually I think there's a lot of people that are anarchists that aren't even thinking or talking or anything. It's just not on their radar at all. I think there's a lot of really different worlds within anarchy of people that there's like some things that just don't overlap. But for me, it just became sad waiting for uprisings and thinking that's my only chance of experiencing some kind of magical moments. And then I noticed the reaction my body was having to being in a forest for like a few days at a time and how it felt different to go back to a city. And so I started thinking about that. That was kind of the starting point for me, or the my most recent like interest in this stuff. And then getting closer to some elders that have been like thinking about this for longer, I think, and having access to those people, being able to like talk to them or hear stories about their life. Yeah, what about you? What do you think? Why do you think that's happening? Or why is that happening for you, do you think? Smoke?
Come back to me.
We always will. I guess for me it feels like it's been a constant or something. But I don't have necessarily what I would call practices around that. More just, I mean, I spend a lot of time with plants and in the forest, and so and I immerse myself in their like live and recently dead bodies. So I guess I was saying to Smoke yesterday, like, to me the fact that like other beings would have an interest in their own survival seems like obvious, or like consciousness, and I don't know how to put that into words. It just feels true. And so that's about the level that is my, like, I don't have a whole set of practice around it except that I'm noticing how they are relating to each other, and then how I participate in that, like tending lands or tending stands of plants. And I think the thing that stood out for me the most in the topic of the week is just thinking about patience. And we have a friend who talks a lot about like changing the span of time and thinking about time from the perspective of a rock or the perspective of a tree, or as opposed to like a human being. And I think that kind of patience deepens or like changes perspective of the way that I think about urgency. And not to say that it takes the urgency out of things, I'm just saying it gives me a different cadence sometimes to the urgency that I feel. Yeah, you know, like I come from a sort of green anarchy background, or it's no stranger to me. And it's sort of been there, just like maybe I'm focusing on other things. But when I was thinking about this, like talking about this today, I was just like, oh, that's that's not something that is like at the forefront of my mind. It's more like the root of it or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like guiding me in ways that I'm not even necessarily thinking about. But if I think about how my life is and the things that I've moved toward, it's the sort of this belief that, you know, yeah. But again, I'm not like super religious about it or something. So it's...
Hmm. What would it mean to be super religious about it? What do you mean by that?
Maybe, I don't know if I stand by this, but like what I mean by that or the association I have is like creating a set of practices that other people will do with you. Like for me, it feels kind of, yeah, not necessarily personal. Like I'm happy or fine to talk about it, but I don't have the cultural framework, and I don't have like necessarily like, however you want to say this, the ancestral memory of these kinds of things. So it's a relationship that I'm learning about and noticing, and it takes time. Like I agree with what they're saying about patience. Mm. And also I think it's in development. Like I think about it in different ways at different times. And also, yeah, I'm always learning. I mean, I work with herbs, so I'm always learning from plants, what they're doing, how they interact with people, how they interact with each other, how they interact with, you know, fungus and all this stuff. So I'm thinking about the vast interconnectedness. And I feel like it is important to mention that, like, the question, or like, there's a lot of commentary about like woo-ness and like, why are we so preoccupied with being woo? And it's funny because for me, it's the opposite. It's like, to be honest, I am woo, and I feel a little self-conscious about it. I'm not trying to flex on it. I'm just saying it does feel like the thing that I believe is like in interconnection. And yeah.
What does woo mean?
I think it means hippie woo woo.
What is that? What?
It's a derogatory word for like faux spiritualism, I would say.
Why is it faux?
Because there's different, like there's a lot, I would say that the association comes from people out of the 60s or 70s who got a cursory understanding of some kind of earth-based religion, then melded them all together and combined them from like yogi practices to like stolen indigenous knowledge or indigenous knowledge that was shared, but either way, like melding it and manipulating it to be like a something that is perhaps serves their worldview or something. And so I think the connotation is that it's like fake, fake and disrespectful, or it's just like, or the less nuanced way to say it is that woo-ness is just like not material. Hmm. Like people who criticize people for being woo are often like, yeah, the no gods, no masters tattoo people who maybe are cynical and, atheist and like real politic or something, maybe would be my association. But I'm sure there's like other people who... Does that answer your question based on my association?
Yeah. I'm not sure that what the thing you just said about woo and the way that it has been created or like the way that it came to be is something you can't say about any other cultural practice at a certain point in history, maybe.
But I feel like we're sort of like, even the cadence of, like, I'm fine.
I'm also not trying to defend it. I'm just like, I'm unclear about it. Sorry to interrupt. I'm unclear about the way that, I'm just unclear about it as a derogatory term, and the way that it's used is a little confusing to me.
Well, I would say that someone who's using it to dismiss you is not really interested in what you have to say anyway, so it doesn't really matter. What you can hear from it is that it's a dismissal.
Okay.
Well, so we don't have to get into the weeds of why they're dismissing or whatever, but the point being, what you're saying isn't serious. It's woo.
Because it's not rational, mostly? That's
probably.
That's the argument?
That would be what I think.
I'm most familiar with hearing that term used by, like, revolutionary communist people who are like, oh, you went to talk about flower essences? That's crazy. Why don't you bunker down and read Ernst Mandel and, you know, study economic formations or something?
Something material.
Yeah.
Mandel is a kind of flower. Is it?
I don't
know. Okay. An earnest bendo. Sounds beautiful.
Smoke is speechless.
Yeah, that's what I want with my jokes.
The confused look glazes over my face.
But I wanted to say, like, the fact that the conversation goes in this direction of, like, people who are floating and melding together culture and, like, cultural appropriation, like, woo carries all of that connotation. But in the topic of the week, it talks about that sort of, that whole question being wrapped up, like, animism conjures something in a lot of people's minds that is something that's from the past or something. And that's obviously not true. But it feels like a way that, like, anarchists are trying to reconnect to something as opposed to a continuous line of connection. And obviously there are people who have that continuous line of connection. But another thing I was thinking about is that, like, animism isn't inherently, like, quote, good or bad. Right? It's like a belief system that's animist cultures have also been colonial or hegemonic or whatever.
Yeah, I've always, not always, that's not true. I have recently been confused how, like, somebody like Derek Jensen or somebody could go in the direction of talking about wanting to sit by a creek and, like, pay attention to the life around them and then get to a kind of position that he seems to have now, that there is, like, a natural, essential kind of humanity, or you can make kind of essentialist, like, assertions about the way life is supposed to be or something, is really confusing to me. And it seems to happen kind of often, which is really, like, it's honestly kind of a little scary to me that happens. I don't actually feel any worry that will happen to me, but I feel like I spend a lot of time doing those kind of things, and the realizations I'm getting are kind of opposite. Yeah, so it's weird. I don't know.
Real question is, beware the fascist creep about that, creeping into fascism, or is it like a person who is a creep?
<don't know.
laughs>
Beware that both.
Is both.
I think it's both.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for answering my question.
Play on words. By a FBI person that wrote that book.
What book?
FBI collaborator. Oh my god, there's gonna be fucking comments about this or nothing. Maybe, I don't know. There was a book called Beware the Fascist Creep or The Fascist Creep, and it turned out that the guy was actually collaborating with the FBI and all this kind of stuff. Super irrelevant to the topic, but fuck. I feel weird bringing it up.
You're going to a news jail.
Oh no. It's fine. I feel like I'm already there. Yeah, I don't know, maybe that's not worth talking about that much, the fact that, like, there is this thing that happens when people go in this direction of trying to connect with nature and, like, some ancestral knowledge. Seems like usually white people, this is a white people problem, of them becoming, like, trans people are bad and also I am kind of a Nazi or something. Like,
they all think that of themselves too.
Probably not in those exact words.
You're just like, wow, how about runes?
And so cool. Like, runes also don't have to be bad necessarily, but it's just, like, interesting that, yeah, it can go in that direction. And I don't know what the, like, I don't know at what point, like, I would actually be curious to talk to some of those people about, like, how they got there or something. Because I think it would be good information for people that are also interested in connecting to nature and, like, whatever, you know? If it seems like it keeps happening for people. But I've always just found it strange, I don't know.
Well, I think the way that you get there is, everything is sacred, we have to protect it, you need to listen to me so we can protect it. Oh, but you're talking about essentialism, not necessarily like a DGR style slide.
But then also, like, if how do you go from sitting at a creek and listening to the birds and whatnot to, like, trans people are, like, somehow a threat to the living world? Like, how does that...
It's like, there's no, like, necessarily liberatory ideas that you come at from being a nature guy, you know?
Hmm.
Like, people, yeah, I mean, the encasing of the earth in concrete is, like, relatively new, and people hung out by creeks for a long time and still had some pretty gnarly ideas.
Mm.
You know? Gnarly ideas aren't that new.
Primitivism would argue against what you just said.
But well, you know, come find me.
Yeah, I'll post your address in the comments. Too soon.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's like, it's great that for those of us, and I'm, or for people like, you know, maybe you're like, you grow up in some suburb of a major metropolitan area and are raised in like either a non-religious family or just like in the lazy half-practicing world of like a lapsed Catholic or something, and you like grow up completely alienated from everything around you, and then you figure out about creeks and you're like, oh man, this is opening a lot of doors for me. I'm learning, I can like join the lessons that I learned from creeks to things that I'm thinking about with anarchy or trying to relate to other people in like a non-hierarchical way or something. But also you could just be like, that's like one way to these questions, but you could also just be a dick and also like to go camping, you know?
As it's like, evidenced by camping.
Yeah. When you go to the REI, it's like they're not all animists.
I thought all the people going 40 miles an hour on their mountain bike through a forest were all trying to connect to the spirits.
Some of them just want to, like, do cattle ranching.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I feel, well, on this part, like, of the whatever fascist-y thing, because I think that's already so hyper-focused and it actually takes away time from... Like, I know I brought it up, but yeah. I think it takes time away from the more interesting conversation of, like, personal experience with the living world.
Mm.
Which, like, yeah, those stories are important.
I like the question, if other worlds await, do we even have the patience to reach them? What do you think?
I think that the world I am currently living in and forced to, like, work in and interact with, that is... filled more with dead things and dead aspirations sets me up to be incapable of having that sort of patience. The experience of time in a like civilized industrial world is makes people that are completely impatient, I think, and that includes me. So in order for me to be more patient, it would mean separating myself or like living outside of that experience of time and reality as much as I possibly can.
Like, are there other worlds, or is it just we live in a world and then they put a bunch of stuff on top of it and it got complicated and bad? So I'm like, are there other worlds waiting, or is it just, are we waiting for the world that we live in, or like the place that we live to heal in? I don't know. I'm other world stuff feels a little bit like some space thing to me, some sci-fi thing. But maybe that's just an individual prejudice. Like, what's meant by a world, I guess, is where I get stuck on that question.
My definition of another, or of worlds, would be a different experience, like a different collective experience of reality.
Mm.
So it's not that I'm saying, like, you can obviously that's also like a spiritual thing, right? But yeah, the collective reality of work and money and all of these things is a different world than a world of living collectively in a forest and not having to work and think about those things. It's just like a different experience of reality. And it is part of the... Yeah. It helps me to think about it like that.
Worlds within worlds.
Worlds within worlds, and that like we create worlds by having different realities and like our perception of what's going on around us and in our lives is its own world.
Hmm.
Is what I mean. But there's a lot of... I mean, obviously, it's a lot of... They're not separate. Like, they're all over. I'm forced to go into the world of work, for example, and interfacing with time as, like, part of capitalism or civilization, and that's, like, I'm being forced in that world, and I both want it to collapse, and it's like imposed on me, and it's inside me.
Patience to just talk to the other. Thank you for sharing that. Patience to the other to the other end of that question. Uh-huh. It is just a little too woo for me.
Oh no. You're right. If you can't count it, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. You said it. Patience is something that gets easier for me as I get older. Mm-hmm. And I think that it feels kind of intuitive that, like, the big lessons are ones that take a really long time to learn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, things can move very, very slowly in the world. When you think about, like, volcanoes. Mm-hmm. Volcanoes both happen. The things that are happening seismically both occur over really, really, really long scales of time that are completely incomprehensible to us. But then also an eruption happens in the space of minutes. So it's... All I'm trying to say is that I hope that I can have the patience that that person's referring to, and that it feels like something worth trying to cultivate.
I wouldn't want to have that kind of patience all the time, though. I think it's nice to, like, it's nice to go into a different experience of time or, like, different experience of reality. But I wouldn't want to stay, like, I wouldn't want to stay with the patience of a tree or a rock or, you know? There's also times where I would want to have the patience of a lizard or something.
Mm.
A day fly.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that is an interesting thing because of insurrectionary stuff and their kind of, like, aversion to patience. Or maybe not patience, but, like, fuck, what is the word?
They don't want to wait.
They don't want to wait. But I think there's a difference between being patient and being... like
urgency.
Yeah, urgency and patience are maybe the difference there.
You know, the time to act is now. This is the messaging.
Yeah, the time to act is now, right? Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Hmm.
I both agree and don't. I don't know. I fluctuate on the days when I'm a rock and the days that I'm a day fly.
Hmm.
What are some more questions?
Do you find the topic inspiring, or does it dredge up an unrelenting pessimism?
I mean, I think the topic is inspiring. I don't know about... the questions aren't posed the way that I probably would or something.
Hmm.
But I think the topic of animism is inspiring to me, yeah, sure. I mean, ultimately, like... Also, what is meant... what is, like, meant by inspiring, too? Because I think the, like... Like, I feel a rage when I sit with this stuff long enough and I realize all the life that has been lost because of paving the world over. And, like, my inability or, like, my life experience has been very limited by what is, like, yeah, the paving over of the world or this, like, kind of, like, erasure and extermination of, like, people that have thought about life in different ways, and that, like, yeah, that just, like, isn't super accessible to me, and that pisses me off. I feel inspired to be upset and figure out what to do about it. I guess that's a kind of inspiration.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Animist, king, and book writer David Abram would maybe... point out in Spell of the Sensuous that inspire shares the same roots as the words for breathing, and that an inspiration is like a, you know, the breath of life entering you and or something to that. Maybe that would be one answer to your question about what is it to be inspired.
Hmm.
And also conspire.
And also conspire, breathe together. Yeah. Conspiracy.
Yeah, I like that.
He's also, for what it's worth, really good at cobbling together life ways and ideas and cosmologies that have absolutely nothing to do with one another in the interest of some sort of, like, more or less unified New Age theory. And maybe they'll come for me in the comments about that, but I kind of feel that way about... Some people would maybe call that syncretic. spirituality or something.
What does that mean?
Assembling together things like the way I described it.
Yeah.
It's like just a more religious studies kind of term for it, I guess. But yeah, that's how I feel about it. Feels a little bit like I'm in the shopping mall of spiritual tendencies. What will I put on my spiritual frozen yogurt, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I feel weird about the thing of like picking and choosing, because overall that's what I just do in my life with so many different things, not just spirituality. But I kind of move through life and I'm like, this works, this doesn't. Or, you know, I'm going to make this thing up or change a thing, you know. So, but, I mean, of course I try to do that without being disrespectful to people if I'm getting inspiration from them. But also, I just, there's a Wolfie Landstreicher thing that, where he talks about the kind of pushback against that process, and that it's part of capitalism trying to, like, calcify ideas into a product. So, like, it turns Lifeways into an ideology that's static, but actually that's not how ideas are or have been ever. That they generally, over time, people influence each other and take things from each other. And, like, that is not... I think it would probably not be great to use that as a thing to totally shut down a conversation about larger, like, social... like cultural appropriation stuff that does definitely happen too, but like I think maybe holding both, that things aren't static, people are inspired by each other, they take each other's ideas, and that's like seen as like being part of a living world too.
Yeah, and it could well be that we're so fractured and broken and so much has been lost that we just have these little fragments of different things that unfortunately come to us, you know, mostly by anthropology, and since all we have are these little pieces, we have to gotta find something.
And you're talking about a pretty specific us also, I think, right? Like, there are people that don't have, like, that actually are, have a...
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Like, yeah. I am not having that experience. Or I mean, I guess in some ways I am, like, but it is little bits and pieces of my ancestry that I get. I don't have, like, a whole thing that's together. And a lot of it I don't like, so I actually just don't want to do. Maybe not a lot, but a bunch. What more questions?
Well, I guess I was thinking about Gaia theory and how it plays into animism. Gaia theory, the thought that the world is alive, an entity that is like trying to create like I don't know exactly remember the theory, but like homeostasis and allostasis. And so like climate change being this thing of like the earth is trying to right itself, or in Gaia theory to herself. And and I'm just thinking about like all these floods and all these things, and the way that people would, how that ties into animism, if it does.
It is a way of thinking about it. I don't know.
It is a way of thinking about it.
I don't know how it works. I don't know if it works for me, because it feels like I would rather leave it unknown or something, or like turn the earth into some like mother figure that has similar thought patterns as a human. And like I do believe the earth is alive and is some sort of being, but I'm not going to talk about how I believe that it thinks, because it just feels imperceptible. But I also feel that way about like, yeah, flies and lizards and all of these things, where I'm like, that is some magical being that's having a totally different reality from me, and we are also connected, and I have no fucking clue.
Do you think that way about other people, that they're magical beings that you don't think the same of us?
I try to. Yeah. I would like to think.
Sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. It also is like having that perspective towards the human world around me is like not very compatible to my job, for example. You know, where I'm like, yeah, I don't know, or going to a store or fucking anything in civilization, really, most things.
There's this Ruth Ozeki book about animism where this person is able to tune in to the wills and voices of every object. Like, the pencil is sad because you haven't written with it, and the book is heartbroken because you haven't opened it since you were 5 years old or whatever. And that the voice and cacophony of, like, all that is around was, like, so overwhelming, and you can't make peace with all the various, like, wills and consciousness of all of the objects. And it's really, really, is a really interesting way to think about it. Like, if everything is alive, then everything has competing interests and everything. Like, I mean, that was not the point of her book. Let's just be clear about that. But it's what it made me think about a bit, is like, yeah, there's so many, we are so, like, affected and affecting the terrains that we inhabit, or the people, the other beings that we yeah, we need them, they need us, that kind of thing. So I feel like, yeah, it's hard to imagine that, like, it is like the immensity of that is something to sit with, you know. Because with, like, the, like, what you just said about not ascribing a human thought process onto the earth or something, it's like the same would be true for anything. Like, we just wouldn't know.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have very few ways of understanding it aside from what we know, so that kind of creates an impasse.
It's just, to me, such, I see so much evidence that going down that road seriously is, like, a destructive process.
Which road?
Of trying to understand or something. Like, maybe I misunderstood what you're saying. But I guess biology or anthropology and like, study of animals and this type of thing.
What did you understand about that and what I said?
Okay, I'm confused.
I didn't say anything about that.
Maybe,
or think about
maybe
it.
I was zoning out.
So maybe you didn't hear what I was saying. Or you were tuning into that oak tree.
Competing needs.
They really want science. Believe it or not. they long to be understood.
The oak tree was telling me I should major in biology.
And you just thought it was me. Well, one thing is, if the world is alive, it is trying to cook our brains.
Yeah, currently.
It is hot in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why don't you read that quote, and then we'll...
What is the... Wait, can you say the question? Because I remember... before my brain melted, I remembered how this connected. No, I do not.
What are examples of anarchists incorporating an animist perspective in their projects? Do you find the topic inspiring? How do we distinguish ourselves from the professional class? What are the biggest hurdles in formulating it?
Just the bold one, I think, is what I was thinking.
If the secret is to really begin, where do we start?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, because I think this is a direct, it's an attempt to touch, or to answer that question. And I can read it. This is from Nihilist Animism, which is written by Aragorn. That is, to me, somebody I definitely read to think about this kind of stuff. And what he wrote is, what I would propose, what a nihilist animism would entail, would be an acknowledgement that a spiritual endeavor must come from a sociable practice. This might be a conversation between seven of us in the woods, or different sets in different places, but it has to pass the test of the I, we. If you can find a group of people who are willing to ride the tension of being individuated, having undergone the great pain of core alienation in the modern world, while not privileging one's own experiences in a group, then you could begin. This would look like a long waiting while the traffic passes overhead, while your devices beep, bop, beep in your car, when you could be doing other things for the world around you to expose its language to you. This would not happen quickly. It would probably take years, and then it would shape a set of principles, a path to walk that would make sense to your set of people. I think that's really beautiful, and I recommend that text. to people. Well, sure. Should we close? Who wants to do it?
I'm unjustly.
We did nose goes. This is democratic.
You've been voluntold.
Oh, I forgot. That's a good word.
You want me to do that? What do we need to do to close?
Just this for a while.
This till the computer dies.
Yeah. Till all the technology overheats. I don't know. You sounds like you want to do it.
More questions than answers, as usual.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is kind of what I leave with anytime I start thinking about the series of topics that people understand under the umbrella term animism.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah. It's a path to walk rather than a bunch of answers. Word. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Good luck out there. Bye.
Sound editing was done by Rosinante. The script was written by Chisel and read by Chisel and...
Crayfish?
Crayfish, nice!